Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
3 minutes after 1 a.m. here on The Fan in New York City, Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. Hopefully everybody had a pleasant Lug evening. It is after hours. I got you for another 55 minutes or so. Alison Tron comes your way at 2 a.m. The Yankees have now lost 9 out of their last 12 games. And despite this June swoon, they are still the best team in the American League, in my estimation. I still think the Yankees are going to the World Series. Now, they're dealing with a ton of injuries, including their best player in Aaron Judge and one of their best pitchers in Max Fried. You know, certainly the leadership that Stanton and Judge have, not being around, you know, necessarily all the time, and Grisham being out of the lineup, and now you're not getting a production out of Bellinger, and you're not getting production out of Ben Rice, so that's going to be a huge mountain to climb when you have the injuries they have and the two guys that you expect to carry the load when those guys are out are not hitting, which is, you know, it happens. Guys go through slumps. The defense has been really, really, really bad as of late. You hope this is something that doesn't follow this team around for the rest of the year. I don't think it will, especially, like, I mean, Bellinger dropped the fly ball tonight. I mean, if that guy drops a fly ball, well, that's all you need to know about the state of the Yankees right now. I mean, Bellinger is arguably the best defensive outfielder, certainly with the versatility that he has in all of baseball. Caballero made an error, and you expect him to have, you know, great defensive efforts night in and night out. I just think it's the typical June swoon, and the reason I wouldn't worry about it is, as a Yankee fan, you've become accustomed to this. I mean, this is what they do under Aaron Boone. And then you also factor in the matter of that they have all these injuries, and they were able to hold the fort down for a while without these guys, but I think it's kind of come to a head now, coupled with some of the slumps that they're going through, and really all facets of the game, they're not performing at the level that you would expect them to be. Defense is not there, pitching's not there, offense is not there, and you get this sloppy baseball, and you get this losing streak, and you get the play that they've had over the last, you know, couple weeks. And at the same time, the Rays have gotten hot again, and now they are up 3 in the loss column. And I think the division is very important to win if you're the Yankees. First of all, Aaron Boone in October, when he has the home field advantage, that is advantage Yankees. When he doesn't, it's a big problem. Tampa, as far as the Trop, is a house of horror for the Yankees. It's not a place you want to go and see a lot of in October. If you're Aaron Boone's squad, I just think that could be a little bit dicey for them. So winning the division is extremely important. So you get through this, you weather the storm, and when the Yankees, which they will, pick up their play, probably, you know, when they hit their stride, usually what? It's around August, September, and then they kind of steamroll teams on their way to another postseason berth. But these head-to-head matchups against Tampa are going to be incredibly crucial. Much like last year it was with Toronto, where Toronto had the edge in those matchups and ended up costing the Yankees in a big-time way because Toronto had the tiebreaker and the Blue Jays ended up having home field in the divisional round against the Yankees, and the Blue Jays moved on to the World Series and were an inch away multiple times from being champions. They didn't end up doing that, but the Yankees, like the rest of us, were watching the World Series on the couch, and it's not a place I think the Yankees are going to be again this year as far as on the couch. I think they'll be playing in the World Series. And obviously there's things they have to address at the trade deadline, including relief pitching, a catcher, another infielder. They need to shore up the bats, shore up the lineup. The one thing they don't need, and the one direction I don't see them going, is trading for Skubal. You already have the strength there with your starting rotation. I mean, Schlittler is as good as it gets in baseball. Max Fried's resume certainly speaks for itself. And when Gerrit Cole's your third starter, I think that says a lot about your rotation. Now, obviously, he's a little bit older. He's coming off a major injury. But if Gerrit Cole was the guy you were leaning on to be your ace, I think it would be a totally different conversation. Then I would say, okay, you know what? Go all in for Skubal, even if he's just a rental. It'll get you over the top. But you have Schlittler and Fried. You already have two strong, strong aces at the top of your rotation. And Gerrit Cole, I think, settles in nicely as your third starter, especially when you consider coming off a major injury, getting more of an advanced age here as far as a baseball player is concerned. But that's where I would allocate my resources to a bat, especially a catcher, maybe bats, another infielder as well, in addition to catcher, and some, maybe even more than some, but probably, you know, two or three let's call it relief pitchers, way before I would go looking for Skubal. Now, if you can get a starter on the cheap, perhaps, but Skubal's not going to be cheap. He is not going to be cheap. And I just think the only argument you can make against that that I could buy to a degree is you're keeping Skubal off your competition. So you're blocking other teams. That's the only thing that makes any sense for the Yankees trading for Skubal. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Tom is in Bergen County here on The Fan. What's up, Tom?
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's happening?
Oh, excellent. Pleasure to talk to you again.
Likewise.
I remarked on your meteoric rise last night, and I have a lot of respect for you and the show. As a fan, I think I would like to hear or see your top 10 rejoin songs. I like your energy. It is,
thank you,
singular. It is singular to you. It has that loogie callback, but I don't know what those songs are. Like, that's not my kind of music, but that's fun. I'll dig in if you put it up on Twitter. Give me your top five.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, those loogie songs.
Yeah, a lot of people have asked me for either to put it on like Spotify or like the rejoins, stuff of that nature. I that perhaps is something I can incorporate, whether it's on the air or on social media, where I'm basically a human Shazam. I'll tell everybody what the songs are and what my favorite ones are, maybe a couple a night, and that way if you do like the music or one of the songs kind of hits you at the right time and it's good mood, good vibe song, I can let you know what it is.
Please do. I'm Generation iTunes, and I pay a dollar a song, and it's mostly Van Halen. So unless you tell me what it is, I'm not going to look. It's awesome. And as far as the Yankees go, it is the annual June Swoon Under Boom, and it always happens, but...
It almost sounds like a party or a soiree. You know, it's our annual June Swoon with Aaron Boone. Bring cupcakes, enjoy, you know, the party favors. That's what it sounds like. It almost sounds like an annual soiree that you have in the summer.
Well, it's like a Dr. Seuss book, except it's not as enjoyable or colorful. But there should be the rejoin of Stanton and Judge.
Yes.
And that should be a better, like you said, a hammering August, a hammering September. Mm-hmm. Get tuned up. Get ready for the alcohol is a trot. You're to play catwalk, AstroTurf baseball.
Yeah.
You don't want to. You know what I mean?
You don't want to see that place. I mean, really, if there was one thing that would scare me a little bit with the Yankees, besides the fact that they sometimes can't hit in October, it would be going to that place. Because, like you said, it's like miniature golf there. I mean, there's just all kinds of things. You got to hit the ball through the clown's nose. I mean, it is a dump, yeah. But it's the Rays dump, and they use that place to their advantage. Even though it would be 80% Yankee fans there, even for playoff games, it's still a major advantage for the Rays to play games in that park, especially against the Yankees, who tend to struggle down there.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Let's love.
No question. And you know, last thing. I know you don't want the Yankees to get school.
It's not so much that I don't want them to get him. I just don't think that they should go after him. I just don't think that it makes any sense for them.
Right. And sometimes I know you, with all the respect, I say it with peace and love. Sometimes I hear the Mets fan and Loogie come out with some Yankee strategies, and you might just not want the Yankees to get him. What's it going to cost the Yankees?
If I was going that direction, I would be pushing for Skubal, because I think it's a major mistake considering that they have other needs. So if I was trying to be sort of the evil, you know, Met fan wanting to torpedo the Yankees, I would be saying, yes, you should trade for Skubal. You should ignore the bullpen. You should keep putting Wells out there. You should keep putting McMahon out there. Because I got news for you that the Yankees would be in big trouble if they just went and got Skubal and didn't address all their other needs.
Double and triple reverse psychology from Loogie. It's always a pleasure. I love listening, man. Have a good night.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah. If I had some type of evil intentions, or I had some type of ulterior motive, I would be telling you, hey, get Scooble, because I think that is the wrong direction to go. And you know who agrees with me as far as this? I think Cashman does. I don't think Brian Cashman and the Yankees are going to trade for him being Scooble. I just don't see it. I think Brian Cashman knows where this team's bread is buttered. I think they know. They've already, they gave Cole a ton of money. They gave Fried a ton of money. They have developed, to their credit, Cam Schlittler into this stud pitcher. They gave Rodon a bunch of money. They have already used a ton of resources. They traded for Weathers in the offseason. They have put a lot of money and resources and trades and free agency into this rotation. And we've heard things like Chico tonight with Scooble. You also have to be smart about things. And you have to know where your flaws are as a baseball team. And where you have glaring flaws. Like if you could get a catcher that pops up here that is a stud, if that somehow is a situation that develops and you're able to land that and that's what's going to cost you those top prospects, that's the direction I would go. Because Austin Wells is downright pathetic right now at the plate. I mean, the numbers are just, you look every day to see like almost like a stock market to see if they'll go up at any point, and it's like, seriously? I mean, he is still at 10 RBIs. It's going to be July in a couple of days. 4 home runs, 10 RBIs. And I know Aaron Boone, which Aaron Boone will do. He's a player's manager. Unless you're enjoying a lollipop on the field, he's not going to criticize you. So he has been very optimistic, Aaron Boone, that Austin Wells is going to turn things around. And he's batting 155, Wells is, with 10 RBIs. He's on pace for 20 RBIs this year. 20. As the starting catcher of the Yankees, playing at that park, left-handed bat, in that lineup. A team that we know when they're on scores a ton of runs and often leads baseball in runs scored and home runs and things of that nature. For Austin Wells to not, and the average, you know, is never going to be good. I mean, he's a lifetime. He's in like, he hit 219 last year, 229 the year before, 229 the year before that. So he's not a high average guy. He's in all likelihood never going to be that. But he showed promise last year with 21 home runs and 71 RBIs. And now he's got 4 home runs and 10 RBIs and we're almost at the All-Star break. That's just not going to cut it. I've said this before as well. Ryan McMahon, to me, should not be starting games in the postseason. He should be coming off the bench as a defensive replacement, as a left-handed bat that could pop a home run. He's not a starter. I think the Yankees are going to be looking at adding 2 bats and multiple relievers. That should be the focus. That's what's going to make them a better, more complete team, not going for the sexy, shiny toy in Scooble. If Gerrit Cole was your ace right now, and he was coming off a major injury, and the rotation was in shambles, and you weren't sure if Cole was going to be able to regain his form because he's coming off a major injury, then by all means, yes, go all in for Scooble. He's the type of guy that can win you multiple series in October. I understand where the Yankees would be coming from. Not with what they're... I mean, when you look at the team, that's not where they need help. They need help in other places. If you want to tell me they can get a pitcher on the cheap, because Scooble won't be cheap, okay. But Scooble's going to cost you top prospects. Top players. There's going to be a major, major market for him. And he is, in all likelihood, unless the Yankees want to sink more money into their rotation, he is going to be nothing more than a rental. Now, if you win a championship, it's worth it, but there's always that risk of the rental, especially when you consider it's not any major need. There is that risk of you're renting a guy and you don't win a championship. And now, I know prospects don't always make it, but you could use those prospects to help fill out your team and your ball club and make them better. Because the Yankees have glaring, despite being the best team in the American League, which they are, and I do expect them to go to the World Series, they do have glaring needs. I mean, the catcher situation is just, it's dire. And they know it. They know it. I mean, Aaron Boone's going to sell you a bunch of whatever he's going to sell you, but they know it. They know they don't have anybody they could put back there. That's if they had literally any option that they could throw out there a catcher, they would do it. But obviously, what's behind Wells is even worse. Jerry is calling from Scotch Plains here on After Hours. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, what's up, Lugie?
What's going on?
How you doing?
Great. How you doing?
Well, I agree with you. There is nothing we can do. Like, Scooble is a bad idea. It's a bad idea.
Yep.
But what can we do as far as, like, shoring up the bullpen, having nobody at catcher? I agree with you. There's nobody at catcher. So, like, what are the ideas? You talk about it, but I really would love to know what we could do as far as, you know, making that catcher position better.
Yeah, I've thrown a name out there a bunch, and that's Hunter Goodman. Now, I don't know what the Rockies are going to be at the deadline, meaning obviously their season is not going to end up with a postseason berth. But as far as a franchise, you know, where do they stand right now as a team that's been awful for a while? They're continuing to rebuild. He is obviously an all-star catcher. He hit 31 home runs last year. He's got 25 this year, so he's on pace for probably about 40 home runs. He's a right-handed bat. He's still young in the prime of his career. Yeah. If he is made available, that to me would be the number one, without a doubt, target for the Yankees.
I got it.
And relievers, look, you're looking for guys that can bridge to Bednar. So start to look at some of the teams that are out of it and potential guys that could be options as well there. And a couple of weeks ago, maybe even a month ago, I was questioning Bednar being the closer, but he has settled in now after giving up that home run to Taylor in the Subway Series, and now you have full faith again in Bednar. But as far as the guys that get to him, not exactly a ton of confidence in everybody. So I would be looking at maybe two or three arms out of the pen as well.
Do you like this guy, Legrane, or what?
I'd have to see more when we get closer and closer. As far as I think Goodman, because I don't, as far as catcher, because I think he is one of the best catchers in the sport, and Colorado certainly at a point where they could trade off players. I think it's just a question I can answer better in a couple of weeks when we see who is really going to be a seller, and I could do more of a deeper dive into their pens.
I got it. All right. Well, thanks for the call, man.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Bednar has been unbelievable. I mean, his numbers since giving up that home run to Tyrone Taylor have been awesome. Awesome. And his ERA is about to dip below 2, which is usually where it lives. I mean, obviously he had that one awful year in 24, but where his ERA ballooned up to 5. But outside of that, this is a guy that's usually going to live in the twos as far as an ERA. And we know he can handle New York because he's been here now for pretty much a year, and I don't think he's shown any signs of the moments being too big for him. He obviously pitched in October last year for the Yankees. But I'll get you a better list as far as relievers. Like I said, we can look at some of the teams and see if there's any suitors. But Goodman with the Rockies catcher, that's a name I'm going to continue to bang the drum on because I think he's incredibly talented. He has a ton of, he's such a major upgrade over Austin Wells. It's not even funny. He's got 20, Goodman does, 25 home runs. Austin Wells doesn't have 25 RBIs. But that's the type of guy and player, especially because of his position, where I would go all in. Not with Scooble. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to join the conversation. And the Fan Focus is presented by Chef IQ. Watch the game, not the grill. Get your gear at chefiq.com. You know, I think back to the draft with Ja Morant and Zion and, of course, R.J. Barrett. And I remember the emotions that I had leading into that draft. There was obviously a lot of talk about the Knicks. And this was back when we were more focused on ping pong balls than parades. And we were hoping the ping pong balls led to the parades. We came to find out that it wasn't about ping pong balls that would get us a championship. It was Brunson and Cat and OG and Bridges and Hart and Shamit and Mitch and Alvarado and Deuce and Clarkson and Mike Brown and et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't about losing on purpose, essentially, to get the ping pong balls to bounce in your favor. But I remember that year so vividly because there was so much attention going into that draft, because obviously Zion Williamson, who was just, he looked like he was going to be a problem. I mean, his obviously that Duke team did not win a national championship, but it's hard to win with freshmen. It just is. I mean, very few teams in college basketball that are dominated by freshmen. And that year they obviously had Zion, Barrett, and Cam Reddish. Two out of the three ended up on the Knicks. The one guy you thought would be on the Knicks ended up being the one that didn't make it there. But Duke didn't win a championship that year. They might have even got bounced in like the Sweet 16. I forgot, but I think Purdue knocked them out. Anywho, it's hard to win with freshmen. But Zion obviously had a ton of hype. Ton of hype. And the overall consensus was Zion was going to be a game changer. And the Knicks were so bad that year, as they were often were, that they were in the position to hopefully win the lottery like they did with Patrick, and Zion would be the new Patrick Ewing. Little did we know that Zion, whether it's his weight or perhaps some of his, you know, interests or whatever around the court, you know, he hasn't lived up to what many thought Zion would be in the league. But I remember being like, oh man, they didn't get the number one overall pick. And then when Ja Morant, who I did like at Murray State, you know, when he bursted onto the scene, I was like, geez. So not only did they not, the Knicks not get Zion, they didn't get Ja Morant, who's going to end up being the best of the bunch. It's, I mean, it would, there must have been a million freezing cold takes about that, because if you didn't, it was hard not to anoint Ja Morant after what we saw initially. I mean, the athleticism, the ability, and he may find himself in Portland, and obviously some of the off-the-court stuff, and it just, it wasn't working there in Memphis. They are a team that has gone backwards. You know, only a couple of years ago, they were, you know, I think like a one seed one year, but they were right up there, that's for sure. And they were heading in the right direction with Ja Morant, with a Desmond Bane, who now is residing with the Orlando Magic. But you could kind of tell that Ja Morant was going, and then Memphis drafts Boozer this year, so clearly they're going to build their team around him, and Ja Morant was on his way out. But it's just, it's funny to me now to look back and say, man, because I remember just being like, damn it, we couldn't get Ja Morant. Not only did we not get Zion, but we didn't even get Ja Morant. Now, think about this. You don't get Zion. You don't get Ja Morant. You do get R.J. Barrett. And what did you get for R.J. Barrett? OG Anunoby. It all worked out. It didn't seem like it was going to work out, but it all worked out. It all worked out for the best. Because R.J. Barrett led to OG Anunoby, which led to the tip-in, which led to a Knicks championship. So somehow, some way, all these years later, not winning the lotto, or winning the lottery, I should say, the draft lottery, and not getting the second pick either, it actually benefited the Knicks because, I mean, can you imagine Zion in New York? Can you imagine Ja Morant here? You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it would have ended well for either one of them. In fact, I would predict that both of them would not be a Knick as we speak. R.J. Barrett wasn't a Knick either, but you were able to get OG Anunoby, who has just been such a force for the Knicks. And it all worked out in the end, for the Knicks at least, which is all I care about. But it's just funny now to look back on that as Ja Morant is going to his new team, the Portland Trailblazers, where I was certain it was another chapter in a long book of the Knicks just, of course they don't get Steph Curry. Of course they didn't get Ron Artest. Of course this player was drafted either right before them or they passed. You know, the draft was a horror show for the Knicks for so many years. Horror show. And I thought this was another example of that happening. I thought that, you know, I it's funny, I did an event with John Wallace. Great dude, by the way. And I didn't bring this up, but I often think back to that draft where the Knicks got John Wallace and Walter McCarty and Dante Jones, and I just remember being so pumped up for it, and obviously that didn't go well, but the Knicks oftentimes disappointed with the drafts, and I thought this was going to be another example of that. They don't get Zion, and then John Morant's going to be a star, and R.J. Barrett's going to be a nice player, good player, which that's exactly what he is, by the way. That's what R.J. Barrett ended up being, good player. solid player. But I thought Ja Morant was headed for superstardom. Zion was obviously the crown jewel of that draft. The Knicks, of course, fall short on that, and they get the third overall pick, and they're going to get a good player, not a great player. Some would say it's typical Knicks. And it wasn't a game changer. But come to find out that it all worked out in the end because RJ led to OG. And now Ja's got to find, you know, maybe a new NBA life there in Portland. And Zion, I mean, come on. You know, wake me up. It's one of those situations. Wake me up when anything happens, good or a positive for him as far as his career goes. Which, look, you wish him the best. But Zion was another, and it's just a tale of, hey, sometimes you think a guy's generational, can't miss, going to be awesome. That's what Zion Williamson was, the can't miss. He's going to be awesome. You want this guy. Doesn't, you know, year in and year out, there isn't always that player in the draft where throughout the year you just hear about, oh, you're tanking for Zion. You're tanking for this player. You lose it for, like, you want that guy. Zion Williamson was that guy. He was. And then it looked like Ja was going to be that guy when they actually got onto a basketball court. Not that RJ ended up being the guy, but RJ led to certainly one of the guys that played a major hand in the Knicks winning a championship and is going to be around now for a long time. And he's a big part of this nucleus, which is the best starting five in the NBA. And the bench is continuing to round out here. GTA signed a 3-year deal on Friday. Alvarado's coming back. Shamet today, or yesterday now as it was, a 4-year deal. He's coming back. Huck Porty looks like he's on his way out. We don't know about Mitchell Robinson yet. I'm still hopeful, but we'll find out. Diawara's coming back. And this team that we all love so much and gave us such an amazing year and run, if not fully, they're going to come close to running it back and defending their crown. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. It is After Hours. It is Tommy Lugauer. It is Lugie here in the late night. Another half hour to go. So really, whatever's on your mind, whatever we've covered here in the first few hours and after hours, if you want to talk about the Mets and David Stearns and their managerial pursuit, if you want to talk about the Yankees and their June swoon here, a typical June swoon, if you want to talk about the Knicks, you want to talk about NBA free agency, we'll touch a little bit on what the Warriors are looking to do here with LeBron and Anthony Davis. So a final segment to go, another half hour. Alison Tron comes your way at 2 a.m. The phone number to join the conversation, 888-808-1019. It is After Hours. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie in the Late Night here on The Fan.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen? Not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
135 here on The Fan in New York City. Tommy Lugauer, Lugie. Final segment here on After Hours. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. We as Knicks fans got great news yesterday. Landry Shamet is coming back on a 4-year deal. This is on the heels of Jose Alvarado inking a 3-year deal on Friday. By all the reports I've seen tonight, it sounds like Huck Porty might be on his way out. Mitchell Robinson, we're still waiting here on pins and needles. Based on stuff that we saw from Stephon Bondi last week or from Shams, it at least feels like the Knicks could be moving on from Mitchell Robinson, or better put, Mitchell Robinson would be moving on from them. Although if it's a second apron thing, I guess it'd be more the Knicks moving on from him. But Ian Begley had an interesting tweet, and I understand kind of what he's going for here. He said the Knicks will need to shed salary via trade if they want to stay under second apron and make a competitive offer to Mitchell Robinson. Because that's the other thing, too. Mitchell Robinson could get a big offer where it's too rich for the Knicks' blood, even if they do shed some contracts. Like if they trade Deuce McBride, or maybe somebody else, too, and they open up some space for Mitchell Robinson, it's possible, like the Celtics are desperate, or a team out there, desperate meaning for, well, they're desperate in general, but they're desperate for front court help. I mean, the Celtics are just an absolute mess. I mean, this idea that they're, and I'll continue to say this because it bothers me. The fact that the Celtics are favored to come out of the East is an absolute joke. And I got to double check that because you want to sell me on Giannis was going there. Still, the Knicks should be favored. But the fact that Giannis went to Miami and he got traded to Miami and he's not going to the Celtics. I mean, Jaylen Brown's going to be out of there. They have the Celtics have no front court. Now, Mitchell Robinson would certainly help. So I could see Boston certainly backing up the truck for Mitch as far, and I know Mitch loves trucks, but I didn't mean anything. That wasn't pun intended. It's meaning it's just a saying you say for money. They're going to back up the truck there and give him a bunch of money. I could see that. So even if the Knicks create room by trading a player or two, it's still going to be a competitive race to get Mitchell Robinson. But certainly good news with Shamet. Certainly great news with Alvarado. I was very happy to see that Diawara is coming back. If you lose Mitch and Huck Porty's gone, you didn't address the bigs situation as far as getting a big in the draft. Now, obviously, you have free agency. You can do the vet minimum, things of that nature. And in Leon, we trust. So it's not necessarily me criticizing, because I don't see how you can criticize Leon Rose at this point. But it's more about pointing it out. Just drawing everybody's attention to it. Not criticizing, but just saying, okay, they're going to need a bruiser. They're going to need a big. They're going to need somebody in there. If they don't get Mitchell Robinson back, they're going to need a rebounder, especially on the offensive end. They're going to need somebody to do the dirty work, much like what Josh Hart does, much like what Mitchell Robinson did. And this is if Mitch is obviously on his way out. And we're going to find out. We're going to find out soon enough. Because I think Mitchell Robinson is going to make a decision, I would say, pretty quickly. I don't think it's something that's going to drag out. I mean, he kind of knows, look, I'm going to stay with the Knicks. If they open up enough space, if he wants to be here, he does. If he gets blown away by an offer by one of these teams, I think he'll probably take the money. It's a little bit different for, you know, Jalen Brunson. You take less money, you build a great team around you, it helps your legacy. Jalen Brunson is going to have a very lucrative career after the NBA. He's already making a ton of money anyway, but he's going to make even more money after he retires, of course, being the king of New York and just, you know, just being a legend already. I mean, even Obama was calling Brunson the king of New York. I mean, that's going to stick with Brunson, that sort of moniker. And obviously, he's just, you know, Knick royalty and New York royalty at this point. I even think it makes sense for Kat to take less money because, hey, you saw the other side there in Minnesota. Winning in New York, it just means more. So this idea that, hey, I'm up for an extension. I take a hometown discount. I do what the captain did. I did what Brunson did. And look, Kat's already made a ton of money. You always want to make more even if you made a ton of money. But he's going to make a bunch of money as well with an extension. And I also, the thing with Karl Anthony Towns with an extension, and we'll get back to your calls here in a second. So let me put Karl Anthony Towns up against Giannis here. Kat's game, to me, will age better. So a contract extension with Kat would age better than it would with Giannis. Giannis has no jump shot. He's never really, because he hasn't had to because of his physical abilities. He doesn't have a low post game. So his game, once he loses that burst, that step, that athleticism, which he's already had some injuries here over the last couple years, and his availability is in question, but once those things start to go from Giannis, his game will go into the toilet because he doesn't have a shot. He doesn't have a jump shot. Can't shoot. Where Karl Anthony Towns is one of the best shooting big men of all time, if not the best. So his game will age very well. So a contract extension with Karl Anthony Towns, I think, will age very, very well because he'll always have the ability to knock down shots. And we saw this past year that when Kat puts his mind to it, he can defend. He did an amazing job against Wemby in those first two games. But that's always been my top priority for the offseason is getting Karl Anthony Towns locked up for an extension. Let's head out to Mario in Long Beach here on The Fan. What's up, Mario?
What's going on, my friend? How you doing, Luke?
Great. How you doing?
Yeah, good. So on the Knicks, like, very, very excited about everything, you know, especially Brunson. Everybody coming back and apologizing about that 1A thing. It's very interesting what's going on.
Yeah,
right,
everybody's
now,
had to sort of, you know, and I think that I think for Josh Hart, it's for comedic purposes. But I do think Jalen Brunson is absolutely 1,000% fueled by that stuff, and I'm glad to hear it because a lot of the great ones throughout the four major sports and even golf and other sports, the ones that win a lot are fueled by the haters. So for people that are hating on Brunson, continue to hate on him because I think it's only going to make him better and more determined to win another chip here with the Knicks.
Oh, no, without a doubt. And the thing is, this Becky Hammon thing, she came back and said that she was wrong, but she didn't say it right. You know what the problem is with the Becky Hammon? I don't know if did you listen to her comments carefully?
Yeah, I did. Yes, I did.
Okay, so the problem was she gets paid, yes, to
give her opinion.
To come up with her idea,
opinion.
Mm-hmm. But the way she articulated it was not an opinion. What she said was, it's impossible to win with Jalen Brunson at the... Everybody
right.
else.
And if you use his size, first of all,
don't
it's inaccurate.
Say the word impossible.
Yeah, because it's not impossible because there's precedent.
Nothing
Steph Curry, Isaiah Thomas, there were smaller guards that were centerpieces for their team that won championships, let alone one championship. So that we've already seen it in the NBA that players that are smaller, that are the centerpiece of their teams, which Zeke was and obviously Steph Curry is, they both won championships. And I don't want to hear about Kevin Durant, that mooch. I mean, they had already won before he got there. So Steph Curry was the centerpiece of the Warriors when they won a championship.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, he needs to be acknowledged.
And, which he has been. I mean, some people, they just want to die on the hill when it comes to that stuff. But I like I said, I think it's great because it's only going to be more fuel for this team, especially Jalen Brunson. Like, I brought this up right after the parade. He looked like a guy that has unfinished business, that's not done with one championship. That's just his mentality. That's just the way he's driven. I mean, I think he works harder than anybody really in the league. I mean, go ask Jay Wright. I mean, he said basically Jalen was doing 3 days. He was practicing 3 times a day. So, you know, when you look at Jalen Brunson's success, he's obviously undersized. He's obviously, compared to NBA players, not the most athletic guy. But look at where he's at right now, at the top of the mountain in the NBA. And I think that says a lot about him as far as his work ethic.
No, without a doubt. You know, before you go, I just want to say something about Giannis.
Yeah, of course.
Well, if you get a chance, could you look at that video when with Kyrie Irving, where he got tripped, and they were saying, some people said it's dirty.
I mean, listen, when he stuck his foot out there.
Did you look at it recently?
Yeah, no, that was a couple of years ago. That was a bunch of years ago when Kyrie was on the Nets. I mean, ask Evan about that one. I mean, it basically, you know, Kyrie got hurt, and it kind of derailed the Nets' playoff chances there. And I think that was the year Milwaukee went on to win the championship. But yeah, Giannis stuck his foot out. Obviously, Kyrie landed on it, hurt his ankle. I think he was out for the rest of the series, and it really put a tailspin into the Nets' plans. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Despite this June swoon, which is a typical June swoon, so as a Yankee fan, you expect this team under Aaron Boone to struggle in June. Despite their recent poor play, despite this June swoon, in my estimation, the Yankees are still the best team in the American League. I expect them to go to the World Series. I expect them to get through the American League. I expect them to win the division. They are the best team in the American League. And I think because it's their typical June swoon, coupled with major injuries, you're without Judge, you're without Fried, you're without Stanton. Trent Grisham has been out. So you're dealing with all these injuries. Now you have Rice struggling, you got Bellinger struggling, but you're without your best player. And you're without one of your best pitchers, and you're without two of your top leaders in Judge and Stanton. If you factor that with also the June swoon, I think it explains a lot of the poor play we've seen from the Yankees. But I fully expect them, much like they do every year, to get hot at the end of the year, to steamroll their way to October, win the division, and ultimately find their way back to the World Series. So it is a June swoon, but the Yankees are still the best team in the American League. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. The other thing about the Yankees, if I'm Brian Cashman, if I'm the Yankees, I'm not trading for Skubal. As great as Skubal is, the Yankees are already well off in the starting rotation. They have a terrific, tremendous, unbelievable starting rotation. I mean, Cam Schlittler is as good as any pitcher in baseball. Max Fried is a terrific pitcher. Gerrit Cole is your third starter. I mean, that's the best third starter in all of baseball. So you're deep in the rotation, not only deep, but very, very top-heavy. When you look at the Yankees and their needs, catcher, I mean, Hunter Goodman makes a ton of sense. I mean, he's got more home runs than Austin Wells has RBIs. He had 31 last year, Goodman. He's got 25 so far this year. The Yankees need bullpen help. They need a catcher. So Goodman makes a ton of sense. If you want to allocate your resources to get that type of player, I would be all for that. You need bullpen help. That's where you're... attention should be as well. I think they need another bat as well in the infield. As great as Skubal is, And as much as an equalizer Scooble can be, look, if the Yankees had a rotation where Gerrit Cole was your top guy, he's coming off a major injury, not pitching well, and you wanted to bring in Scooble to take you over the top, okay, fine, absolutely. But that's not the situation with the Yankees right now. The only argument you could possibly make is he blocks, or the Yankees would block another team from getting Scooble. But that's not the way you should go about your deadline. The Yankees have to complete this team in order to win a championship. And as great as Scooble is, plus he's a rental, I would not trade major prospects and go in that direction to get Scooble. I would look at a catcher. I would look at another infielder, at getting both of those positions tightened up. And then multiple relievers like they did last year. Not Scooble. As sexy as it is, as much as it's, oh, that's what George would do. That's the big move. That's the splash. That's the huge swing. You connect. You hit the ball over the fence. But that's not what the Yankees need. They are absolutely set and head and shoulders better than anybody else in the American League as far as starting pitching. Scooble, as great as he is, it's just not a need. Catcher's a need. Other positions are a need. So if I'm the Yankees, if I'm Brian Cashman, I would not trade for Scooble. 888-808-1019 is the phone number to call. Let's head out to, it is after hours, by the way, Lugie in the late night. Let's go to Ray in Brooklyn here on the Fan. What's up, Ray?
Lugie, what's good, my boy?
What's happening?
Yeah, I'm going to have to start calling you Lugie Hauser because like you are making very astute observations and assertions on the Yankees. And it is, I must say, it's refreshing.
Yeah, I don't know where all the Scooble stuff is honestly coming from. I'm trying to figure out like where it started. What was the, who kind of got this Scooble ball rolling? I really don't get it. I know he's great, but I don't see what, because someone accused me, well, Lugie, you're trying to be like the Met fan and you don't want the Yankees to get Scooble. No. If I was trying to be the Met fan to kind of torpedo the Yankees, I would say trade for Scooble because I don't think he is the missing piece. I think you have other needs that you should address. So for me, Ray, I'm just trying to figure out where this Scooble stuff kind of started.
Yeah, no, of course you'd rather, you know, if you're going to give up assets and do it for some, for, you know, for a place of need, that, you know, that absolutely makes the most logic and sense. And not just overall, man, you've been like super objective. I don't know if it's just because the Mets are doing so bad, it's kind of making you a little humble, or
no? I think it's a bunch of things too. I also have a responsibility to the audience. I mean, I'm on at night after Yankee games. That's not to say that I'm going to tilt my opinion just to favor, you know, get people's favor. But I also just believe in this team. Now I've been fair about, hey, if they don't get it to the World Series, then I would criticize the run it back. But I am fully confident based on their talent and based on what the American League is looking like that the Yankees will be back in the World Series for the second time in 3 years. So I stand on that statement.
No, absolutely. Listen, in the words of the great Jalen Brunson after their season ended last season in the Eastern Conference Finals, I am overconfident. I'm too confident that the Yankees will be the, you know, next up this season in the Canyon of Heroes. Listen,
You're going all the way championship. Now, yes. I thought you were going to say World Series there. I didn't think you were going to go championship.
No.
So you're saying championship.
Lugie. Absolutely. Listen, remember, I'm the guy who called all Knicks fans since the beginning of the season to the end. I called them cowards for saying that they would be happy with a finals appearance. So listen, you want the whole thing. You want the whole pie. And as far as, look, I really called about Mitchell Robinson. Look, the guy, Lugie, I think a lot of people are underselling him. Remember last season when he played 17 games and we were 0-10? Without him against the best teams in the league. Then he comes back. He completely changes the defense and the dynamic of the team. OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges were having horrible seasons for, you know, by their standards defensively. Everybody was getting off a three and making them. The Knicks were worse in the league after that. Mitchell unlocks the entire defense. His impact cannot be overstated. I do disagree with what you said about, you think we would have won the title without him anyway? Listen, can we win the title without Mitch? We can win it. We have Jalen Brunson. But like, I'm not nearly as confident. Then if he goes to Boston, listen, right now, Boston's not even a real threat. Like, we would have mocked them in 4 or 5 games.
No doubt.
You know, top. And so, but with Mitch, if he switches, you know, to that uniform, they do become a threat because he completely revamps a team's defense.
Yes.
We know the impact he has. He guards 1 through 5. And listen, he averaged 17.9 rebounds per 40 minutes. That's Dennis Rodman territory.
Yeah, best offensive rebounder in the sport. Yep.
He maybe, look, in my opinion, remember a few years ago before he got, he sustained the injury, the serious one. He was playing nearly 30 minutes a game, and he was in consideration at the midway point of that season. People were talking about him for defensive player of the year. Mm-hmm. In my opinion, not only is he the best rebounder, he's pound for pound, minute for minute, the most impactful defender in the league. Even after watching Wemby and Jalen Brunson get, you know, serving him like he's not even, like he's standing still. I think Mitchell Robinson is the most impactful defensive player on the planet. And guys like Claxton are making $25 million a year, and several other guys who are not on his level and don't impact the game like him. So the Knicks are going to probably have to spend another thing I agree with you on, Lugie, second apron,
no doubt.
Damn. The reason why you want, supposedly want to stay out of the second apron so you can have flexibility to improve your team and make it a championship team. Well, if you just sign Mitchell Robinson and complete the bringing the guys back, you already are. A championship team.
Yep.
What the
Bingo.
Hell are you concerned about?
Correct. Bingo. Spot on, Ray, with the second apron. That's why, to me, it's second apron be damned. You're not talking about adding players. You're talking about retaining your players to defend the crown. So, yeah, run it back, second apron, be damned. I've been in lockstep with that ever since I heard the comments from James Dolan a couple of weeks ago. I'm thrilled that Landry Shamet is back. I'm thrilled that Alvarado's back. I'm thrilled that the Knicks have added or re-brought back two integral parts of their bench that led to a championship. So Shamet back, Alvarado back, two key guys for this championship run this past year, and two guys that I think will be big parts of this group for years to come. So I'm happy that they're back. And hopefully Mitchell Robinson will be back as well. We're going to find out soon enough. All right, that'll do it for me. My thanks to Fleegs. My thanks to Nick Papagiorgio. My thanks to the listeners. My thanks to the callers. We will be back on again later on this evening for After Hours. That will be following Yankee baseball, Skubal versus Schlittler. So it should be a tremendous pitching matchup. And I'll have you after the postgame. We'll do a little Mets, obviously, Yankees, Knicks, all those good things coming up tomorrow. So thanks again. Had a great show. We'll talk to you tomorrow night right here on After Hours.
Sports Radio 101.9 FM. WFAN, New York.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. As we approach America's 250th anniversary, now might be the time to go back and learn how we got here. With more than 200 episodes, you can binge your way, decade by decade, defining event to defining event, from the founding into the 20th century. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.